Hello and welcome back to Minor Network. I'm joined today by Henk de Hop, the new managing director over at SFA Oxford. Henk, good to see you.
Good to be here.
Those who are less familiar with SFA, I mean, obviously we have done an interview with the former chairman, Stephen, in the past. Obviously, you're one of the leading PGM. That's what we originally knew you as. But there's more to SFA than just PGM outlooks, right? Maybe you could just give us a quick overview of what sort of work you're conducting at the moment.
Sure. We have traditionally been very much coming from the PGM industry, and PGM industry analyzes in a lot of detail. But 10, 12 years ago, we started to do our first work in lithium. At the time, for a client that was looking at introducing hybrids into the car market. And since then, we've built out that battery materials research to quite an extent as well. On top of that, obviously, one of the other big factors that is going to drive PGMs in the future is the hydrogen economy. So we're also doing detailed work in the hydrogen economy and the impact, particularly on critical materials, for that to be achievable. Mm-hmm. So it is actually quite a nice tripod where the PGM industry's outlook is very much affected by how successful EVs will be. EVs' success will be dependent on the battery materials market and the ability to supply those materials. And the opportunity for PGMs, as it gets weakened by the loss of combustion engines, is obviously the hydrogen economy, because we need PGMs for electrolyzers and for fuel cells. And that's why it's actually a great combination of skills that we have to help people that are exposed to this industry to understand where the world is going.
Good. Well, I think we wanted to talk to you mainly about PGMs today, but like you said, they are very interlinked with the EV and the hydrogen side, so we'll probably try and mix in as much as we can. Just looking at the moment of the PGM space, we're in a bit of a turbulent period globally, but platinum prices seem extraordinarily low, especially in comparison, say, the gold price at the moment is. But we're in a relatively stable environment with palladium still above the $2,000. Mm-hmm. What's your current outlook in terms of where we are in the PGM space, and are you surprised by the prices at the moment?
Look, I guess on the platinum side, we're not surprised in the sense that it is very much still in a highly oversupplied situation. A lot of the original demand drivers have weakened substantially and structurally, particularly diesel shares in Europe keep on declining. We have had pretty poor jewelry markets as well, which used to be a mainstay. And that seems also to have a bit of a structural impact from aging population, particularly in China. And obviously, COVID lockdowns in China haven't helped. It's very difficult to see that in the short term, platinum prices will recover based on those fundamental factors. The palladium side is slightly different. There is still a big demand driver in the form of autocats. Combustion engines are continuously being regulated harder, and we've seen a big uptake, particularly in China, of additional palladium necessary to clean exhaust gases. Now, that is not an immediate, obviously, threat from an EV perspective, because the bottom line volumes are still quite big for autocat demand. What is going to happen, and we see the first signs of that already, is platinum prices relative to palladium prices make it sensible for you to start using more platinum in your autocats. The tricat autocatalysts that have been designed are starting to see some uptake, and that will help the palladium market to come down to more sustainable levels and hopefully support platinum in a more sustainable way as well. So it will likely see in the years ahead a moderation of the palladium price going forward and creeping up of the platinum price as that rebalances.
What's the difference in terms of actual quality though, in terms of using platinum as a substitute for palladium in the autocats there?
They both do an excellent job in actually cleaning exhaust gases. Some drivers are economic, some are temperature driven. If you put a palladium catalyst very close to the engine in a nice hot place, it does an excellent job and you don't need platinum. In the case of in the past, when fuels were slightly dirtier, platinum did a great job as well. I think in the meantime, though, it is the fact that gasoline engines require palladium and are good, particularly at palladium is particularly good at getting rid of some of the pollutants in gasoline exhaust streams. It will still have a very strong space there. Traditionally, the Japanese have always had a good blend of platinum and palladium. China has favored, like the US initially, very heavy palladium consumption for the auto catalyst. What we're now seeing as well is that because the heavy duty sector is getting more legislated and seeing further steps in the regulatory or tightness, you will see quite a strong platinum uptake. So that's not necessarily only in the autocat side, it is much the heavy duty volumes are starting to pick up. And that is obviously much healthier for the overall PGM market if you look at the mix of metals that we produce from the ore bodies that we mine.
Yeah. There's a few things going on at the moment that I guess all sort of linking up, but you've got the war in Ukraine, right? What's the risk here in terms of supply chains of palladium, especially? I think it's, what is it, around 40% of palladium comes from Russia?
Yeah.
Are you anticipating more sanctions, or is that even a possibility that could really cause some turbulence in this market?
A lot of people have focused on the sanctions on actually being able to sell the end metal, and they haven't happened yet. And the indications that we're getting is it will be very difficult to find alternatives for Russian palladium, exactly because of the reason you mentioned. They produce 40% of the world palladium. You would really badly damage the car industry, because without a catalyst, you can't sell a car. You basically can't sell a polluting car. So there seems to be, although Putin himself has been sanctioned, there haven't been any active steps yet to hit the palladium markets. What we do think people should more focus on is that if you run a modern mining organization like Norilsk based on a lot of foreign equipment, and that foreign equipment supplies, be it the actual equipment or the spare parts or the chemicals that make your flotation plants run, that gets sanctioned. That is a different type of way of constraining metal supply to the world. The first signs have come through in their results where it's being mentioned. There's going to be a strategic review, and the strategic review is quite important for the palladium market because they had very large expansion plans, obviously part nickel driven, but also part palladium driven. And that loss or postponement of projects would be quite a, in a way, healthy future development for palladium, because it would reduce the oversupplies that were predicted previously based on the ICE engine coming. The ICE engines coming off in a demand perspective. What you therefore have to carefully look at, if the strategic review shows that these big new palladium expansion projects get postponed in the future, it will give palladium prices probably a bit of a longer runway and actually giving up their current strength. That would be probably a bit of a relief for a lot of the PGM producers as well, because if you have a combination of a recession, a big EV penetration, it is not a great picture for the palladium market. So a moderation of palladium supply is probably not a bad outcome for the markets, if that would be the end result from the sanctions that we're seeing currently.
What's your view on, obviously, if we are, especially 40% from particularly Norilsk, and we're starting to see that, or at least the expansion slowdown, right, and potentially even have an impact on their overall production if they're having problems sourcing equipment over time. And then we've also, what's the other 40%? How much is coming out of South Africa at the moment from the palladium market?
It's probably a similar percentage. 40%? Yeah, because we have to remember the other big supplier is the recycling industry.
Yeah,
that is supplying a lot of the and it's also one of the reasons, if you look forward, where a lot of this metal comes out of the period we were sucking a lot of palladium into the autocat side in the US, but China in particular. Remember, China is quite a unique car market. It came out of nowhere and became the biggest car market in a very short space of time, never seen before. It, on top of that, started pushing legislation, cleaning up those cars far faster than what it took the European Union to actually develop the standards, get the technology right, and then tighten those standards over time. China could squash that in a much shorter space of time. And as a result, you have a car park that's moving very swiftly into the autocat recycling business. It's one of the reasons why some of the big recyclers in the world are setting up new recycling plants in China, because there's a lot of material coming back. It is one of the reasons that the recycling kick up that we see is starting to show weakening fundamentals for the palladium market, because that is not something you easily stop. And that is one of the or the big supply factors that we see that's going to disrupt that market.
I guess one of the things I'm thinking of anyway is that obviously we've got potential supply disruptors in Russia. I'm sort of wondering, we were talking before about Sibanye. I think they're reducing their forecast in terms of the amount of palladium that they'll be producing.
Mm-hmm.
What's the risk in South Africa that they won't be able to keep up with demand? Or that they might have more power outages, or we've seen that in the past as well, right? I mean, surely we're in a position, what I'm trying to work out is, are we in a position where palladium's got a long enough future to incentivize new mines to come online over, say, the next 5 to 10 years? Or is this a short term, there's some supply issues going on in Russia and South Africa, but really they're just going to substitute more from palladium, and then hopefully after the recession, or if there is one, then we'll be in a bit of a better situation, right?
Sure.
That's the main thing I think a lot of investors are trying to get their head around is this just a short-term problem with palladium, or does palladium actually have, say, another decade to have its day in the sun?
I guess to wind back slightly, the announcement from Sibanye Stillwater was very much on the Stillwater mine that had big expansion plans, big ramp-up curves, and that has been moderated quite a bit because of a range of issues that they faced, short-term and longer-term issues. If you look at South Africa, there's a range of structural issues that are probably seeing them not necessarily adding much to production, with the exception of Zimbabwe. And some of the big old mines, firstly, are running down. That is a natural issue of mining out an ore body. And it's going to be very difficult to see that any of those will come back at the scale that would be required to replace them. Building a 1,800 meters, 2 kilometer deep shaft takes probably 10 to 15 years to ramp up, probably close to 15 years. You need a couple of years to earn your money back. It is very difficult to justify conventional mining at scale with those type of investment horizons. So they're not going to happen anymore. You will look probably more at the shallower versions, putting a decline down, often on UGT reef because they're easier to mechanize. It's a wider reef. And what you can find in South Africa, so you have probably already a peaking of production in a way from South Africa. On top of that, what you have is at the moment, there's a lot of disruptions from load shedding. Now, that's countrywide, but the mining industry is getting hit as well. That is something that will work itself out of a system over the next 2 or 3 years, very likely partly because the legislation has been freed up now for the mines to actually start finding other models of getting their power supplied. It will still be highly reliant on Eskom, don't get me wrong, because renewables will not solve their particular requirements. But it's given them a breathing space to actually not seeing that as a structural impediment long-term, because the regulations have now changed. What is another issue is cost inflation on the mines is picking up quite rapidly. It's not only wages, it's the power side, it is the chemical supply. And that is not offset by productivity gains, because the mines are getting deeper indeed. So one would probably see that if this cost inflation monster is not tamed, there will be some of the higher cost mines coming to an end earlier than what you would currently expect. Now, the decisions that mines now have to make is that, do we invest in some of those shallower mines to, well, sustain a profile of sorts? It is probably defendable in Zimbabwe, for example, because you get nickel and copper as a byproduct, and it certainly has a very strong outlook. It's mechanized. It is safe production as well. And if you need to take a 10-year view or a 15-year view on an investment you make now, and you are fairly comfortable that it is a mine that is cost competitive in the long term, you can handle a certain price fluctuation. Very different if you have to make much bigger decisions on deep level mines. They're not going to happen. So we see a bit of a balancing of the market. Yes, there's demand falling away from the combustion engine side. There's hope on the hydrogen side. The numbers are still very vague, but I think they're getting more and more exciting. But you do have a gap in the middle where you have to think, okay, what am I going to do with my next dollar? And I think Sibanye already indicated in the Stillwater side, we're not, with this is a palladium heavy mine, we're not as confident on the palladium market. They showed the surpluses for us to invest long-term capital to actually show us, get us these returns. What the industry eventually has to shift back to is what the end markets will look like. It's how much palladium will the end markets need? How much platinum will they need? How much rhodium will they need? And that a shift is starting to slowly appear. We saw it in the trimetal catalyst side. We saw it in the hydrogen economy is probably going to be more platinum rich. And as a result, the mix going forward will move away from palladium-rich mines. It should move away from palladium-rich mines to ones that are more balanced to the future needs of the internet. Now, we're talking a 10, 15-year picture here, but that's the thinking you have to have now in a boardroom if you want to make commit capital to a new mine. It will take years and years to ramp up. It is also the reason why spending money, for example, in Zim or on the Eastern Limb in South Africa is probably easier to justify, because those are shallower, quicker into production mines, and you can actually make those decisions with more confidence than what it would be on anything long-term, deep, conventional.
But so, you mentioned there as well, obviously, influx and potentially this exciting future with the hydrogen economy, right? And we've spoken about this before with multiple groups, and it's always been, we're not quite there yet, but it's looking good. It's getting there. Where are we at the moment with that? And you're mentioning there that potentially there's some new data suggests that it might be exciting, and that it's potentially, and we've always heard for a while now that it is more dependent on platinum rather than palladium. But what's your outlook of this as it stands at the moment?
Sure. You've seen, and it's difficult to miss, the capital commitments, the subsidies, the national priority being given, be it China, be it Australia, be it the US, be it Europe, it is now gaining proper traction. There's spades in the ground. There's industrial-sized plants being built next to refineries that need hydrogen. Oil industry has gotten onto it, and that pushes lots of capital, lots of experience into that sector as well. One has to remember, though, there's different technologies that will all make this happen. Alkaline electrolyzers have been around because you need two processes, or two key processes for PGMs, is producing the hydrogen through electrolyzers and actually producing called electricity through fuel cells. That is, the hydrogen economy is not all PGMs. There's obviously hydrogen needed for industrial processes, for producing ammonia. Some consume some in their catalytic reactions PGMs, but the ones mainly focused on is how much will go in the electrolyzers and how much will go into fuel cells, because those are the big kickers. On the electrolyzer side, historically, alkaline has had, electrolyzers have had a strong position, not necessarily any PGMs in that process. It's a 100-year-old process. It works well, but it has certain applications. For example, it needs steady power and steady running conditions that make it work best. The PEM electrolyzers have been around for quite a while as well, but need proper scaling up and proven cost reduction still to come up as a result of that scaling up. Now, there are a lot of commitments have been made to scale that up properly. The projects are getting bigger. It's almost difficult to catch up. What we need to make sure there, and it was an important announcement this morning by Sibanye Stillwater and Hiraj, they're going to look at how can we reduce the catalytic materials required for those electrolyzers. And it's important. And the reason is that the key one in electrolyzers is iridium. It's a metal you do not find as a primary metal. It's a tiny contribution that you get from a mining a standard PGM mine. So there's a pretty much a cap on what you can actually mine. And the way to make the hydrogen industry sustainable, particularly on the electrolyzer side, you need to bring down the iridium content per electrolyzer and still have it work as effectively and as competitively as you can. So this research collaboration is very much on how can we reduce iridium. It's not a natural way to look at it, but if we don't have enough iridium, we will not necessarily get where we want to be from a volume and a growth and what have you. We, in our forecast, think it is sustainable based on this thrifting that will come through. Because what will happen is that the original current versions of electrolyzers, as they run towards the end of life, in call it 10 years, that metal, which will then feed another 5 versions or another 10 versions of the one you built 10 years ago, will make this industry in time sustainable. So that's an important part of called the hydrogen economy. there's less focus, although it will happen as well, on thrifting platinum at the moment. It is happening, partly because of bringing costs down overall, which any manufacturer wants to do. But there's not as important a future shortage developing in palladium. There's on platinum. There's enough liquidity. Now, you need that in fuel cells in particular. You need a bit of ruthenium there as well, particularly if you source initially your hydrogen from, let's call it natural gas, little bits of leftover carbon in that gas poison a fuel cell. You need ruthenium to do a bit of cleaning up there. But the news flow there is increasingly positive. BMW has already said for their heavy luxury vehicles, they're thinking of bringing into mass production a hydrogen fueled vehicle. They think it's an appropriate system for fueling long distance heavy vehicles. Similarly, the heavy trucking industry very much moving into a binary path. If you have trucks that run from base to base and can recharge, fine. For longer cross-border distances, a hydrogen truck actually makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And from an economics perspective as well. And it's good to see that a lot of the big truck manufacturers are looking at two different ways of actually feeding their truck fleet. So it is increasingly encouraging that is starting to happen. And what we also think is that when hydrogen eventually becomes more widely available, and it is not anymore looking on a map of Germany and say there's five stations across the whole country, it will be 500 stations. It makes a lot easier for people to consider the two technologies. And that, I think, rollout of infrastructure is extremely important to gain traction in the actual, or the mass market for fuel cells.
Are we starting to see any of that investment that we'd need for that type of infrastructure yet into hydrogen? Say, for example, here in the UK or in Germany. Obviously, there's not a lot of stations, like you said, at present, but have you heard of any initiatives that might be ramping this up in the near term?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there was a European announcement where there is going to be support of over 5 billion euros to actually make these, call it, critical technologies work. We recently visited ITM Power, and if you look at the sheer scale-up of volumes that they're experiencing based on real orders coming in, it is happening. Good. And in time when the oil industry, be it Total, be it Shell, is throwing their weight behind it, because there is a long-term interest in actually being involved, and there's a whole range of skills involved that they possess that actually will help this industry to develop as well. If that type of capital and that type of workforce gets involved properly, you will see this starting to accelerate. So it's a very exciting time, because I think fuel cells in particular have always been called the technology of the future, and the future was never coming. But we think we're now at that tipping point where it definitely is heading in the right direction.
If you don't mind me asking, actually, one of the things that might be interesting to know would be, say, for example, there's a lot of palladium and platinum in a catalytic converter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Comparable to a fuel cell, what's the sort of different breakup in, you did mention the different metals that are in both, right? But how much substitution could we see from fuel cells that are going to sort of eat into this? Obviously, EVs are the thing that's going to mainly penetrate the catalytic converter. But how much of that substitution from the catalytic converter can transition into fuel cells and make up for some of that lost demand that we're seeing?
It's highly, highly dependent on volume of fuel cell cars to be sold one day. And they're not anything close to what the BEV forecasts are looking like. BEV has obviously a head start, but there's very certain technologies and applications where you can see fuel cell cars. And it takes a couple of million of fuel cell cars to get real big numbers in platinum demand, for example. The big question will be how successful thrifting will be. Current numbers are a multiple of current catalytic PGM consumptions. So for every fuel cell car on the road, you have a multiple of catalytic demand replacing that. It's very difficult to say how successful research will be, how big a cost driver it will be as well, because the old fuel cells would have 2 ounces, then it became an ounce. The target is 10 grams per car, which is probably still 2 or 3 times as high as what a catalytic converter would do standard size.
Yep.
US is obviously different, bigger sized engines. What the indicative numbers for the big truck that Anglo Platinum put on the road or on in their pit has about 4.5 ounces of platinum in there. Now, how many of that eventually will be optimized is difficult to say. It depends on the light coats and how successful they will be. But traditionally, there will be success. One could either look at halving that, but the target for now in fuel cell cars is about 10. But the impression we get is the focus on that is not, it's not necessarily the most important focus at this stage in time, because it's not the shortage. It is not the main cost driver either. It is a helpful cost driver, but it's more getting the volumes up, getting the technology going and get that optimized and catching up almost.
Catching up on EVs by the sounds of it. What's your outlook in terms of penetration there? Obviously, there's a lot more research that's going into this EV market now, right? And I think last year we saw EV, I think 100% increase in EVs on the road last year. Mm-hmm. Was that right? That sound about right? Yeah. So I guess, are we foreseeing now year on year that we're going to be, I guess, seeing a huge increase in EVs? And when does it get to a point when this penetration really starts impacting the catalytic converter and the PGM market?
Yeah, look, there's a whole range of questions in that one question of yours. There's...